Hello, hi everybody, and welcome back to Awake All Hours, the podcast dedicated to all corners of electronic music and club culture with me, Ali Chester, and my mate and my co-host, Will Edwards. Hello, son. How's it going?
Howdy. It's going well. How are you?
Howdy, partner. I'm grand, thanks, mate. I'm really good. All well, your end, me old mate. Everything going swimmingly?
Very swimmingly. Very, very hyped on this particular episode. Ahead of the big day.
Yes. Big day awaits. We shall inform those who are uninitiated about said big day momentarily. But great to have you here, pal, as always. And welcome. Just gives me a great pleasure to welcome all of you listening to episode 56 of Awake All Hours. Like I said, the podcast dedicated to all corners of electronic music and club culture, in which we usually host with our other dear mate and co-host George Stamp, who can't be here today. He's had a very busy week. So sadly won't be joining us today, but he'll be back very soon. And what he will be doing is DJing at the aforementioned big day, Friday the 19th. By the time you're listening to this, I imagine that I'm probably editing this podcast on the train to London on Friday, is what I envisage happening. So you might just be hearing this before we step into the fabled archway at Spanners Brixton on August the 19th. Date of recording is Wednesday the 17th. Must be.
Good maths. Yes,
if my maths doesn't fail me. Thank you, sir. by the time you're hearing this, we are probably stepping in the archway and causing a ruckus with a fine set of selectors for our family affair party. Thank you, firstly, sincerely, to everybody who has bought a ticket for that event. Tickets are moving steady. We're down to our last 15 as we currently speak, and the response has been magnificent. So thank you everybody for showing your support. We can't wait to greet you all. Can't wait to be just get nice and loose to the sounds of our dear co-host and resident DJ George Stamp, aka Saint Amp, Yasmin back to back Frond, Ikava P back to back DJ XL. Sorry, not DJ XL. That was a faux pas. XL DJ. Sorry. FKA DJ XL, and of course, our designer, artist, face of Awake All Hours, Eloise Thomas L, DJing as Tarsier. We cannot wait. It's going to be a cracker, isn't it, Will? You feeling good? General thoughts
yes,
and feelings on the event?
I'm very, very hyped. It feels like only yesterday we're in that archway, and this one's come around so quick. I'm super excited.
It really has. Yeah, it's true. It was back in March, which seems simultaneously like it should be ages ago, but really doesn't feel long ago as well. And this one has kind of whizzed round in no time at all. It's been a blur. It's been a joy kind of getting everything ready and organising it. And just can't wait for it to materialise. And like I say, thank you to everybody. Like I say, listeners, anybody who is engaged with our podcast, our humble platform in any way, you are part of the series of events that has led us to being able to put on parties such as these, and we are so thrilled about it. So yeah, thank you for everybody who's going to come through to that one. If you're listening to this after the event, we hope it was a blast. We hope it went well. Hope it wasn't a catastrophe. And none of this ages well, any of the spiel. I'm hopeful that it will be a success. And we're all going to have a lovely time. So yeah, see you on the dance floor soon. But anyway, on with the show. So like I said, thank you everybody who is listening to this. We love having you around. You're always welcome here. You know that. So do hang about, do stick around, and do come back anytime. Order of ceremonies today is no different to any other usual show. We're going to be having a big chit chat at the start of this show because me and Will and George have all been to Deckmantle Festival. We had ourselves a lovely time over in Amsterdam. I'm also going to be reviewing some of the Trezor 31 ceremonies as well, particularly the exhibition they had over at the Kraftwerk building and one of the parties that I took myself over to Berlin for. And then we get stuck into album reviews, which we're streamlining a little because we anticipate the chat is going to be a little bit longer than usual. So we're doing Emeka Ogbo and Thug Widow in album reviews before we finish, as ever, with What's in My Bandcamp Basket, where we round up all our favourite little club-ready, DJ-tool, club-adjacent morsels for those interested, in the hope that you may love them as much as we do. Let's get stuck in. So, Deckmantle. Very exciting. So, last episode, I believe we were previewing Deckmantle Festival. We were just gearing up, ready to go, buddy. And we were very excited about the return of the sort of fabled and legendary Amsterdam Festival. It was your first time. It was George's first time as well. And it had been a long time coming. two or kind of knocking on 3 years in the waiting by the time we'd actually booked the tickets. And obviously the pandemic had happened and it rolled over, yada, yada, yada. So 2019 it was booked for, but 2022 it actually materialized. How was it, mate? How did you find it, your first time out there?
It was pretty legendary. It very much lived up to the hype. And it was a lot of hype, all 3 years of hype or whatever. Just a really, really great festival, I think. In terms of just like, I was just so impressed with it. I hadn't been to, this is my first like full electronic music festival. And to be fair, I haven't really been to that many festivals outside of like day festivals and then like Glastow or Boomtown, like those kind of big crazy ones. And I just thought it just worked so well as a festival, in my opinion. Just everything is just so beautifully laid out, such a lovely arena space, really nice like variety of stages, and just like the variety of acts and how it works, how there's just time of day doesn't seem to really make much of a difference at Deckmantle.
Mm.
Aside from like, yeah, it's like really nice to enjoy it. Like some of the earlier afternoon sunshine, hazy, everyone's a bit sleepy, those sort of sets, obviously. But then equally you can just go into the UFO stages at any time of day and it will just be like insane. Like proper 3 a.m. prime time floor fillers. And you'd have no idea.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. Yeah, I'm really glad that you found that and you found those things and you enjoyed it so much, mate. Because I likewise would just, I was nodding along in my head and in actuality all the way through that because I agree wholeheartedly. I love Deckmantle Festival. It's no mystery if you are a listener and longer term listener. You know, I do harp on about it when I get the chance and was super excited to return. This was year number 4 for me personally. And it I think the best year thus far, the best Deckmantle that I have attended. Beautiful company. I mean, first and foremost, exquisite.
That's not what he says off.
Doesn't
camera.
Get any better, does it? Really,
off recorder.
It's like horrible rubbish.
It's like, why did you come?
Terrible time. But it was so. It was genuinely really a special thing to all three of us at some point converge upon that that festival site as well with Joe Whitehouse, dear friend of the show, contributor. Joe actually contributed on couple of episodes ago or one episode ago, I can't forget now, about body movement. So you may think it was last episode. Yeah. So you may well know, you may well have heard Joe's voice or know Joe in person. And so all four of us kind of converged upon Deckmantle, at differing points, me and you Will for the 3 days, Joe and George for the Saturday. And so that was really special, you know, to start with, but just as well to have waited so long to return to Deckmantle, which, especially having gone this year, I think I can safely say is my favourite festival. I just love that place and always have such a, it has a special place in my heart. And for it to be so triumphant, that return, and just so not different. What I loved about it is nothing changed, really. They didn't change the formula. They didn't sort of mess with anything. There was no great surprises as a Deckmantle sort of as a previous Deckmantle attendee, but it was just affirmation of everything I think that festival does so brilliantly, which is basically everything you've talked about, Will. Mm. I think it's perfectly programmed, it's perfectly laid out, it's got pretty much perfect sound, and everybody, I think because of that, every DJ brings their A game, so you never have a dull moment or a dud set. Everything feels electric and, you know, and again, there was just generally that, you know, that other level, that layer of electricity pulsing through the ground, I think, as everybody kind of had that fever of, oh my God, we're returning, you know, finally, you know, after such a long wait. And yeah, it just led to a kind of a perfect 3 days of electronic celebrations, I thought. I really was struggling to fault it. I mean, you know, we'll get into a bit more kind of, we'll do a bit of like a day-to-day rundown and pick some highlights and talk about some sets that we saw, which were really, you know, impressive. But any sort of criticisms? Because I was racking my brain about criticisms. And I think that I had three, right? And I think I had three. One, Budweiser instead of Grolsch this year. Come on.
That's true. But
inferior beer.
Then on the last day, we did discover that you could get the Weizen beer for the same price.
That is true.
And that was a bit of a noob error on our part. But to be fair, it wasn't advertised as such.
That is true.
It said that it was more expensive. So...
Exactly. So that's to be fair, that criticism is semi-debunked already. Yeah. Not even really a criticism. just
I've remembered
beer.
The criticism.
Or Club
Mate. Oh, the Club Mate.
All right. We'll get onto the Club Mate in a bit, I'm sure. And another criticism. More signposts in the forest. On our first day, I mean, to be honest, was that what you were going to say? So on our first day, I must admit, this was mostly my fault, because I didn't put the exact address of the festival into Google Maps. I just put the forest that it was in, this massive forest, into Google Maps. So, I mean, obviously it's not going to probably take us to the right place, but a truly shocking lack of signposting to the festival in the forest itself. I have to say, whether you are a noob Google Mapper like me or not, a noob orienteerer like me, but that was my other criticism. Was there another one?
You said you had three.
I said I had three. I was thinking in the car earlier. I was like, I think there's three. What's the third?
Do you want me to pipe in with my criticism?
Go on, pipe in what?
The wasps.
Let's see if I remember.
There were way too many wasps. Especially on the Friday. I think they dispersed a little bit by the Sunday, but there were just so many wasps that were really, you know, they were just really arrogant wasps as well. Like, they didn't know their place at all.
Boisterous.
Getting all up in my
boisterous
grill.
Boisterous wasps, yeah. Yeah.
That was silly.
No, that's true. That is true. My only other criticism in terms of actual, the festival experience, and again, it goes to show just, I think, really how good the atmosphere, how good the people were, how good the program was. Few too many pushy techno lads for VTSS. That is the only time... when we were watching VTSS in the UFO stage, it got a little shovey, it got a little bit kind of hectic, and that was the only time on the dance floor I felt I was like, oh, I'm not having like a perfect time. But to be honest...
I can't even remember VTSS that well. Was it in UFO 2 or UFO 1?
UFO 1.
Oh, yeah. I remember now. That was a bit pushy.
Friday? Saturday. Little shovey. Hey, it is a big festival. By that time, everyone's a bit swirly. And, you know, I guess you're going to get it at some point. So even that is all I have, really, in terms of criticisms. And they are minor, if not kind of non-criticisms, really.
You know, when you lay them out together, they really need to sort the wasps, signposting, pushy lads for VTSS, and... What was the first one? And Bud issue out.
Budweiser's.
Yeah.
Terrible. Terrible form. So, yes, that is the criticisms. That's the negatives out of the way. And I really, truthfully, I was thinking about it and I don't have many more. You know, it is organised, you know, and props to the organisers for organising such a well-oiled festival. You know, no things like queues to get beers, you know, like small things like that. You just rock up to a bar and you get a beer and you go back to dancing. And you want to do that. You don't want to be spending your time in a queue. It's those small things that they've just got ironed out. The toilets this year were like some sort of, they had a toilet core to the whole festival.
Yeah.
And the whole festival was sort of built around this massive toilet block, wasn't it, mate? And it worked a treat.
It does work
a treat. It was a dream.
Everything
wherever
is just
you were,
so
you were probably like adjacent
to
a loo.
That's the thing. Like you're never... Like, usually I'm just used to at a festival, you know, there being things where you're like, oh, this is inconvenient. But when you're actually in the festival, everything's just there and easy and you, like, never waste time waiting for anything, really, or having to trek anywhere. And, like, all the stages are just quite easy to get to each other as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. Maybe it was also, it also felt like really easy just because as soon as you are outside of the festival and you had to deal with Amsterdam's public transport system, that was such a headache.
That is the other criticism of Amsterdam as a whole.
Yeah.
Public transport. Who knows what's going on there? I don't know. I still haven't figured it out. I don't know which ticket is what. I don't know where to go. I don't know which bus works with which ticket. Still is a mystery to me. But not Detmantel's fault.
Yeah, we can't.
There's not much they can do about that. Unless they, you know, move countries or something. But I wouldn't expect them to move countries. And I wouldn't want them to. No. Amsterdam is a beautiful place. That site is beautiful. And yeah, I mean, that is also, should say with the caveat, that we are two able-bodied blokes, and so subsequently I don't, you know, that is, we can only speak from that, our experience, in terms of the ease and accessibility of things like toilets, water, just getting on the festival site, etc. But it did seem like a pretty genuinely good, well organized, fairly accessible festival, I believe. And you know, and just absolutely cracking. I mean, you know, I think we better get stuck into some music. You know, we've that's the kind of review of the festival itself, that it's pretty much a, you know, a roaring success. Friday was beautiful. First day, stepping foot in that lovely festival ground. We met some lovely folk from Cork on our walk into the festival. Shout out to them. Hope they had a nice festival as well. And it was straight down for Channel One sound system, wasn't it, Pam?
Oh, yes.
Opening up the greenhouse.
Channel One.
Which was joyous. Lovely. Lovely vibes. Just exactly what you want to walk into, you know, first day of any festival, really. Beautiful reggae roots dance hall delivered with sheer joy, you know, from a legendary sound system. It was great, wasn't it? It was a good time.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Very nice start. And yeah, they set the bar high for the pull-up count. That wasn't really lived up to by anyone else. We got a bit overexcited at the amount of pull-ups in Channel One.
Yeah, we did have a little pull up quota / prediction going. I think we said 20. We said 20 pull ups over the course of the festival, and
yeah, after we got about
three.
Yeah, something like that. We got like two or three, I think, in Channel One, and we were like, oh yes, yeah, first of many. And then it didn't really turn out like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we weren't actually seeing Channel One sound system do a set every single hour of every day, so that's probably why it didn't go like that.
If only. That would have been nice. But yeah, they really did a great job of just oiling the festival feeling. Mm. As I'm sure everybody else did at that same time. You know, this is the other thing about Detmantel, is that whoever you are seeing, you are inevitably missing four or five or six people who are also incredible. That is the kind of, you know, the it's the thing you accept, but it doesn't feel like a pain. It doesn't feel like some hardship, because again, everyone is of such high quality that you just go with the flow. And the flow on this particular day took us to a little bit of Josie Rebel, a little bit of DJ Haram, who I thought was great on the new Nest stage, which was a real grow of a stage. At first, quite a bare, not Detmantel's most sort of, what's the word? Sort of visually incredible stage, but made for a really, really nice little kind of den, like sound system culture orientated den, and a really worthy addition, I thought, you know, new stage for this year.
Yeah.
Saw some great sets there. The likes of Darwin absolutely smashed it on the Saturday. Simo Cell, incredible. DJ Lag.
Oh yeah. DJ
Wom King, who we reviewed recently, was killer.
Ace Moma.
Absolutely. A really, really nice addition to Ace Moma.
That was
as well. It was a stacked.
I think that stage really stage, like really nice would come alive like kind of a bit later in the evening when you had like the sort of sun pouring through. And
yeah,
I was saying, I remember like it feels very much sort of like a halfway stage between the kind of UFO like indoor quite like not like what's like claustrophobic, but in a good way, like intimate sort of feeling, yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
With also kind of that summery, sunshiny vibes that the outdoor stages offer as well. I quite like that element of it. And I think it really suited certain sets.
I agree.
Like that, like Ace MoMA, DJ Lag as well. And Darwin as well.
Yeah, it definitely did. Definitely did. It was a really nice sort of, kind of sun-kissed, smoky stage.
Yeah, very smoky. It was a bit, felt very kind of smoky the whole time.
Yeah, all the best bits of like being indoors and out, I actually maybe think like the kind of smoky intimacy, like you say, but then sunlight, you know, sunset coming through and kind of just the fresh air. And although actually not very fresh,
not on the
it
Friday.
Did smell a bit like a compost pile.
It was a bit manure-y.
Yeah, it did smell a bit manure-y. That's again maybe one criticism one criticism of the festival being next to some fields. I don't know.
Yeah, sort that out. Yeah,
hardly a criticism. But it was a great addition, a really welcome addition to, you know, again, the Detmantle sort of the cluster of exquisite stages they've got. And on the main stage, I think we better talk about quickly. Was excellent. First time for me, little old Ali, seeing Anne's in the wild, and which is just so overdue. I've love Anne's. We rave about Anne's, you know, I think deservedly so at every sort of given opportunity. And I just never caught Anne's. I'd never caught Anne's, and it was quite the welcome. Again, everyone on that main stage and across the board seems to bring it, you know, and really step up. I can't, again, speak from experience. I imagine Anne's does that all the time. But this really was a victory lap, I thought, on the main stage at, you know, sort of between 5 and 6 p.m. on the Friday afternoon. Am I right in thinking that, Paul? You've caught Anne's before, so you would be better equipped.
I think I've only seen her the one time before at Warehouse Project, and she was the, like, saving grace of Warehouse Project, which I thought was pretty disappointing, but I thought Anne's was like really fun then, and like probably even more fun on the main stage on Friday. I think she's just so high energy all the time, and just like really like unpredictable. Just always has so many bangers. I expect big things from Anne's, which we'll come on to.
Yes. I think we better, speaking of the bangers in Anne's, clearly in Anne's Bandcamp basket, was Minerals, Wadda.
Oh, yeah. That's huge.
ID of the festival, which was insanely huge. Quick review of Minerals by Wadda, sort of
big old grimy kind of bassline.
Crazy. Big old grimy bassline techno, really. Mm. Ravey bassline grimy banger.
That's the review.
It was big. Amazing. Yeah. Great set from Anne's. It was,
so many big
again,
moments.
More on Anne's later. Yeah, so many. And then it was quite a rowdy finish. We caught Mama Snake in the UFO 2, which is quickly becoming one of my favourite stages, one for the sounds that the UFO 2 is dedicated to, the more subterranean, weirdo, and the fast, and the kind of furious, your techno, your electro, your machine music, on the same stage, we had the likes of Scorn, we had the likes of Animistic Beliefs, and Mama Snake stepped up, and the stage is kind of like this sort of wind tunnel, literally, because they have massive fans at each end. And it's this really long. So when you're kind of wherever you are, if you're at the back or the front, it kind of feels endless, which is a really cool feeling. And they have these amazing visuals that kind of shoot up the length of the walls. So you kind of feel like you are in like some sort of wormhole traveling through the universe in this stage. The sound is immense in that stage as well, because it's close quarters and they don't skimp on their. I mean, I spied big function one, you know, big speakers in that stage. So the sound is so punchy, so crisp, so kind of smothering in the best kind of way. And last time I saw Mama Snake was at Detmantle. Can't remember which year it was. And Mama Snake at that time was playing the UFO 1, which is the big sibling of the UFO 2, that kind of aircraft hangar. We've got if we've got a wind tunnel, we've also got an aircraft hangar in UFO 1. And Mama Snake was playing some really sick electro at that time. It was great. But this time I was not prepared for Mama Snake. I mean, maybe I think we talked about this a little bit while it was maybe my set of the Friday playing just murderously fast, full throttle, kind of punchy, crisp, psychedelic techno, and basically like borderline psytrance as well. Everything had that kind of trancey, just, you know, that thud, that kind of light speed thud of kind of psytrance informed techno. And it was glorious. Beautiful way that to kind of begin off. Seeing off Friday. Yeah, it was a really nice surprise because it's not what I associate Mama Snake with from the past. So obviously, maybe Mama Snake is taking a little bit of a, I've not been keeping up, and I am all for the direction that they are taking. Really sick. And that led into Aquarian eventually. And I have, so Aquarian was a little bit late. Did you see on his socials why he was late, Will?
No. What was he doing?
He basically just said like, I was so gassed, like headline, but like I forgot all of my USBs. I left them like all at my hotel. So he had to go back and like get his, he was like, my one job, literally, I'm headlining a stage at Deathmatch and I forgot all of my USBs. Literally, exactly. So it was Mama Snake and also the other person who was holding the fort for Aquarium was Jensen Interceptor. So we got a little bit of a treat there. And then Aquarian stepped up and I tell you, didn't matter that he was late. I thought he really, really, really shut down the place with an incredible set, starting with some underworld cut off. Is it Second Toughest in the Inn? I can't remember the tune now. This great underworld song that I really love to open, and then just blasting through like Rough Crew and sort of all sorts of kind of light speed rave music. Really, it was cracking. Yeah, it was really good. It was really good. What about you, Paul? What was your sort of like Friday highlight, do you reckon, if you had one?
I mean, Anne's was huge. I also, Mama Snake, I thought that was like, I don't think I'd heard of Mama Snake before, and I was mainly just hyped to be seeing Aquarian, and Mama Snake was just the set that was on before. But like, yeah. Looking back on it, like Aquarian was really fun. I really enjoyed Aquarian, but I feel like Mama Snake did just sort of like kind of blow me away a bit. That was just crazy energy. It was like one of those ones as well. Yeah. Like I can't remember.
Unmatched.
Had we just been? Was it? Did we go straight from Anne's to Mama Snake? Because like I felt like, you know, I was just like on a nice sunny hazy level, and then we just went and entered the pit of Sarlacc, and it was like just. Yeah, it really did like kind of just like smack you around the face. That's it. It was pretty crazy.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. Yeah, it was because we'd come from we sort of done a bit of Sangre Nueva, like sunny, like reggaeton and like dembo, and then like Anne's, which was also like kind of sunny and nice. Bit of Sivo Cell as well. Who was great, but also kind of sun kissed, and then like you say, just plunged. Into the dungeon.
Into the depths.
Full throttle techno. It was nice. It was a good baptism of that sort of flavour of the weekend. Saturday was glorious. We were joined by George and Joe on that day. It felt like on Saturday you inevitably enter the festival a little later. You know, sleep is something that you begin to yearn for as the festival goes on. So we got in for Darwin, the start of Darwin, who was the first set of the day. And I think we stayed for the majority of that set, in actual fact, just because it was really good. And sort of couldn't really tear away from Darwin. Darwin really, really smashed it with her set on the Nest. Brilliant spot for Darwin. Keeping what I love about Darwin, she transitions through so many sort of styles and strains of bass music. But she has a real penchant for like pure bass weight. And when that comes through, just raw sort of, you know, raw subs and wubs, that's
just reminded me of like that one particular tune but all I can just remember was just the groan. Do you remember that one? A really groany number.
Yeah. Yeah. Add some glorious halftime subby drum and bass as well. The ID that got away, halftime drum and bass number. But alas, some of the best do. Some of the best are lost in time. But Darwin is so, so good. And just incredible way to start the day. Caught a bit of Oceanic and Lena Willikens on the Boiler Room stage, which is really nice. And then quickly over to another standout, I think, which is MC Yalla and Debmaster.
Oh, yeah.
Killer set from Hakuna Kalala and Nyege Nyege affiliated MC Yalla and Debmaster. It was just, MC Yalla just brought insane energy on the mic. And it was a really nice kind of break up from more club, club floor sort of sounds to just like jubilant, banging rap, hip hop, bass heavy. It was sick. Really, really, really great. Made perfect sense in the lovely greenhouse stage as well. And then bit of Mad Mirren, again, hotly tipped. Wicked set again in the UFO2. Incredible Dutch selector. One of Amsterdam's finest, really, really did the business there with crazy mutant, bass and wild electronic sounds. But then, low-key highlight of the festival, well, Yusu on the selector stage was a treat. Yeah.
Yusu, what did you make of Yusu? Lovely vibes. That was the first set we saw in selectors, I think. Because previously I'd said, that stage looks cool. That stage looks cool. And you said, that selectors, they only play disco in a very disparaging way. So then it was nice to actually go and see Yusu. And I thought Yusu was, very much like someone that I really liked Yusu's album when it came out last year, I think, the start of around January or something last year. I've been really keen to see her. She was at Glasto, but it was just one of those clashes. And I think just like this was like the perfect stage for Yusu. Perfect time of day. It was just a proper like hypnotic journey of a set. Just lovely soothing sounds in like selectors, which is... potentially when it I see what you mean, if it is just disco all the time, that could be a bit like get a bit tiring, but when I think it hits the spot for Yusu and then like Up Sammy the next day, which we'll come on to, it's just like a really, you know, like one of them are sort of most like transportative places. Like it's sort of you just like kind of forget where you are and you just feel like you're in some clearing in the middle of like a forest, and it just could be like anywhere.
Yeah.
And like with the smoke and the light and the big willow tree and the soothing sounds of Yusu, it was a perfect moment.
It was very great. Idyllic. Such a surprise. And definitely you can hear that setback. Debmaster as well. Credit. Again, where credit's due. Debmaster done an incredible job of kind of this curating this all access kind of post-festival interactive magazine sort of thing they've got on their website. So I highly recommend you check that out with like interviews of artists, recordings of sets, and Yusu's set, thank the Lords, has been recorded and is on SoundCloud, on the Debmaster SoundCloud. So you can hear that back and makes incredible listening, just as good listening at home with headphones as it did in the moment. And just a classic selector set. I totally agree with you. It's probably a little bit generalizing of me and a bit harsh of me to just completely just
you've
sort
been exposed
just
on the podcast,
have a complete
now,
like diss of the selector stage.
But as you didn't a selector think I'd bring that up.
Stage and disco hater. I didn't see it coming, mate. I kind of forgot about it, but alas, I should be held accountable. But I do associate the selector stage with there is a sound. But then again, I'm sure there's lots of people who will go, that blooming UFO1 stage is always just playing techno, isn't it? And generally speaking, yes. But there's more to it than that. And when a set like, when someone like Yusu comes along and really, really plays a eclectic mix of oddities. That's what I, those are the sets I always think are killer. And we're going to talk about another one of those in a moment. Before we do, before we get on to tomorrow, I just want to quickly shout out as well, Juliana Huxable and Jass, the back-to-back made, the back-to-back of dreams for this year. There always seems to be one at a Detmantle Festival, and it always seems to be on the Boiler Room stage. In past years, Umfang back-to-back Volvox was one that kind of went down in the annals of Boiler Room and Detmantle history. And also, more recently, Rennie and the aforementioned Darwin. Which was spectacular as well. And this was the Boiler Room back-to-back of the age for the ages this time around. Killer. I'm yet to watch this one back, but I'm sure it's going to look and sound as banging as it did at the time. I know you as well, Boiler Room stage, I would agree as well that it's a little, it's aesthetically on your YouTube screen, probably a bit cooler and a bit more immersive than it can be in real life.
Yeah.
Would you say that's fair?
I felt like
it
was one of those stages where it was cool, but in reality, it's probably that you kind of, there seemed to be like a bit of a trade-off. I feel like you could either be outside where the sound was actually better because they had the big speakers, but you sort of feel a bit disconnected. Like, especially from the DJ, you can't really see what's going on. Or if you're in the tunnel, then there's, like, I suppose, like, unless you're, like, right by the front, like, I didn't feel like the sound, it was a little bit quiet. And it's also one that it's, like, I guess because you do get a lot of people that are, like, oh, I want to be front and centre of the Boiler Room stage, and also for the, you know, for the reasons that I just mentioned, that it's, like, there's a bit of a disconnect. You do feel like this, it can get a little bit tight. There were certainly times, I can't remember which, I think it might have been during Oceanic, I think, maybe. Yeah. That was on the Saturday as well, was it, Oceanic?
That was on the Saturday, yeah. Oceanic and Lane
One where I was like, well, I do Wilkins. Remember just being like stuck to the wall a bit. just because like,
yeah, it's
a lot of people.
The same shape as the tunnel.
Yeah, because like, there was just like suddenly no space. And I was like, because that wasn't really, it didn't really feel like an issue for anywhere else in the festival that much. I feel like there's always pretty much space at every other stage. So like it's a minor criticism because I think overall it is a very cool stage. But did you say it's the last year they're having it?
This is Boiler Room at Detmantle is no more. So yeah, it was, it's kind of swan song. And I would say again, the programming was excellent and a fitting swan song for sure, but also excited to see what is next. Again, I feel that Detmantle will fill that space brilliantly. And, you know, and the shoes of Boiler Room will be filled with no worries at all. So, yeah, interesting times. And the day finished with a bit of VTSS, who did absolutely bang and would have probably stayed for a bit more had there not been a bit of a surge of the pushy lot entering UFO One for VTSS. Played a killer techno remix of Flo Dan's Welcome to London.
Oh, yeah.
That was very satisfying. That was sick. And then off to the final half of Eris Drew back-to-back Octo-Octo on the main stage, which was only ever going to be triumphant and joyous. And it was. Such a well-deserved headline spot. It was killer.
That
really,
was
really
lovely.
Nice. So, yeah, overall great Saturday. Sunday.
What?
Back to Selectors. Up Sammy, opening up the festival. Now, again, speaking of Selectors sets that really do the business and are eclectic and weird and sort of transcend time a little bit and place, you know, where you, like you say, where you kind of feel like you could be in this sort of clearing in the woods, completely out of reality. Like it has that kind of forest free party sort of feel in a bit of a way. Up Sammy really, that was great. I love that. Kind of playing really sort of strange IDM sort of drum and bass leaning oddities that really made perfect sense in the sunny outdoor air as well. It was great. It was as good as I thought it was going to be. What do you think about Sammy?
Yeah, it was really nice. I think the similarity, I think, with like Up Sammy and UC was you did. I feel like I had no idea how long we were there for either set. Like the Up Sammy one felt like it was a really long set, and I think we came we probably missed the first hour or so anyway, but it felt like we were there for like 3 hours or something. It was probably, we were probably only there for like an hour and a half or something, yeah. But it's like, and like that was,
yeah.
I mean that in a very good way. It didn't drag on. It just like, you got so like kind of captivated, and it was just, yeah, just like a real kind of like a journey is again. And it was like, it was nice coming that early as well to the festival. And that stage, just there being like, it felt like there was only about 30 people maybe just sort of sat around, half people just sat around. It was just like a very relaxing start to Sunday. And it was nice to sort of just see it, ease it in. Proper like therapeutic feeling, that set.
Yeah, definitely. It did have a therapeutic, all that was missing was like some nice bean bags.
Yeah, and some yoga. Stuff.
Like that would have been perfect, you know. And some yoga, it would have been ideal. But yeah, just like a few people just sat on the floor, lying down, etc. And it was a welcome but relatively short respite, because Sunday was mad.
Yeah.
Sunday was crazy. Like from this point, from Up Sammy, Cashew and Bad Sister, Helena Hoff, DJ Lag, Kessler, LSDXOXO, Ace Moma, Jazz, Batu.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Not a bad afternoon.
Yeah.
Music and of just general life, really. It was pretty good.
And the thing is,
it was a pretty good day.
Everybody just bought their A game that day. I mean, like everyone was bringing their A game before, set. But I just feel like it just felt ridiculous how you just go from like one set that was like 9, 10 out of 10 into the next one, and it was just the same.
Yeah.
It's just so high level, and it just never dipped.
Yeah,
like even like we were saying, like
no.
Even when we were just like going to get some food to refuel, we were just like, okay, we can time our food break so we can listen to Kessler when we're in the queue and then go and eat some food.
Yeah, exactly.
And even the tacos banged on Sunday.
Oh, the tacos were outrageous. Whoever's, I can't remember the name of that taco van.
Combination.
Tacos and Kessler was a joy. But it really, yeah, you're so right. It spoke volumes for just that day where, you know, there was no time to eat. And eating had to be combined with a set. Mm. And luckily, we haven't actually talked about the Connect stage, because we didn't actually see anybody else on the Connect stage, but it was really sick,
Yeah. Which
is kind of that mantle sort of outside hut that is just plonked in the middle of the eating sector, like the food court, which is so great as well. Like
yeah.
They know, they're like, you don't want to stop listening to tunes when you're eating at a festival. Like bang a stage in the middle of everyone and let everyone have a good time. And yeah, Kessler absolutely bought the choppy breakage over dinner time. It was glorious.
It also didn't really, the way we're advertising it makes it sound like it was just someone like playing music next to all the food stalls, but it was like still like when you were actually, when we'd had our tacos and went and joined the crowd, it like felt like a fully formed stage, you know.
It was
100%. It was banging, 100%. And it was like it pulled a big crowd as well. At least Kessler did as well. Anyway, but yeah,
definitely.
It was a low key highlight amongst many. There are a lot of low key highlights, but that was definitely one of them.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, Cashew and Bad Sister just really great back to back. I love how they had this sort of unspoken synergy. It was one of those back-to-back sets where they both had their own sets of headphones, which I always really like, because it's kind of like they weren't really exchanging any interaction or very little interaction. They just knew, and they just were joined through the psychic realm of like kind of weighty, bass-laden kind of, yeah, like weight, basically. It was incredible. In the UFO 2 stage again, and then just moment of silence, everybody. Moment, not silence. She hasn't died, but moment of appreciation for Helena Hoff. Absolutely incredible, unbelievable.
Crikey.
Helena Hoff. So, what again? Beloved Det Mantel does so well is that Helena Hoff obviously has had an insane trajectory, and over the course of the festival, me going to the festival, I've kind of seen Helena Hoff's trajectory alongside and with that festival. So the first time I went, she was playing back to back. She was kind of just breaking and was playing back to back with DJ Stingray at the same time, pretty much like 3 PM in the UFO 1 stage. And I remember the year I didn't go, and it's the only year I won't go, because I remember watching the Boiler Room that she did the kind of following year, I think, headlining the Boiler Room stage, and just, it was It was insane. It was like Helena Hoff at the absolute peak of her powers. The following time when I attended, she headlined. They gave her the Depp mantle, the kind of illustrious, you know, headline spot that they do give to at usually one kind of up-and-comer who's had an incredible come-up. And at that point, it was only ever going to be Helena Hoff. And obviously, she absolutely killed it. And it's like, well, what do you do when you've headlined a festival and you've done kind of everything there is to do at a festival? Depp mantle just go, well, just play 2 hours in the middle of the day on Sunday, you know, and have it out in your own way and do your thing. And it was so nice to see Helena Hoff in a kind of, in a very spacious, not empty, but like spacious, three quarters full aircraft hangar, yeah. on a sunny Sunday, just again, doing, just being the baddest person on earth, you know, looking so cool.
So cool.
Spinning two Technic turntables and a big bag of electro. And it was class.
Sunday was the day of the coolest DJs. If you had to, yeah. you had to rank
yeah.
the coolness of Helena Hoff, Bad Sister, and LSD. it's a tough tryout.
They are three of the coolest in the game, I think, right now. 100%. Bad Sister, Helena Hoff, and LSD. Yeah, no doubt. Goddamn, it was incredible. Yeah, what did you think of Helena Hoff's midday kind of...
That was huge.
...showdown?
That was massive. That was like... probably my, highlight of UFO 1, I think, when I sort of saw, like, the capabilities of that stage. And, like, that's kind of what it was made for, really.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that. Again, it's something that Depp Mantle do a great job of, is often putting a kind of a headliner on early. I mean, this is also the same day that Marcel Detman was opening up the Boiler Room stage, you know. And so they do a... it's a real treat to see these kind of like almost secret Easter egg sets where you just go like, you see them on the bill before the lineups get announced. You're like, oh, they'll be headlining a stage and they're just in the middle of the day or opening the festival, something like that. And it's just so cool. Testament against the programming. LSD XOXO, you know, we've talked, DJ Lag was incredible. Kessler was incredible. LSD XOXO again was triumphant. Again, just one of the coolest people on planet Earth, like such a presence. It's and just... playing like really, really hard techno, but also like crazy edits and like,
and then also
like hard house leading stuff, and
smells like Teen Spirit. I can't even remember.
Smells like Teen Spirit out of nowhere.
I mean, I feel like, was that even an edit, or was it just smells like Teen Spirit? If it was an edit, it was like a very subtle one.
It was just a very fast, very fast smells like Teen Spirit. Maybe an edit, maybe not. But yeah, really, really sick to see LSDXO again on that main stage. Probably not the last time. We'll get to that in a moment. But just very quickly rounding off Sunday before we do a kind of final roundup of things. Jazz, solo this time in the aircraft wind tunnel that is UFO 2. Again, similar to Mama Snake. Actually the same slot, just on Sunday, not Friday. Absolutely, like, opened with a Chase and Status tune. Did you say that to me when, what's that track? I can't remember what the tune goes. I am the man with a heavy heart.
Oh, yeah.
And I dare not turn the pages.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Jason Statham's tune?
Yeah.
I think it is.
It is. I forgot it's Jason Statham, isn't it? There's certain moments that I just think, like,
it was crazy.
Because the festival is just so, like, especially Sunday, is just like so chaotic in terms of just, you're just seeing stuff all the time. It's like, I've literally just forgotten some sets completely. And then, like, that's just like, that's like the sort of thing that you'd expect if you're hearing like Jazz open with a Chase and Status song. You're thinking like, oh, that's something that will stick in your memory, but I've just like completely forgotten just because of the amount of things that like my body was subjected to. But now that does bring me back, and that was a bizarre but glorious start.
It really was. And again, Jazz, so cool. So cool behind the decks, just effortlessly laying waste to the wind tunnel with full throttle techno carnage. It was glorious. That was so good. And then all roads led to one place. And this was nice. This was nice because You know, again, Batu. We talk about Batu a lot. It's no mystery that we adore Batu and all things Batu, time dance, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when Detmantle got cancelled in the wake of the pandemic, the biggest, the thing that hurt the most was not being able to see Batu headline the main stage. And again, the aforementioned come up of an artist in Helena Hoff that I briefly touched on, this time it was Batu. You know, this time it was Batu, and he had an insane rise. The story goes that he like stepped in for someone at the Selectors Festival, which is like Detmantle's sibling festival in Croatia, stepped in and played that legendary 3-hour Selectors slot that you can find online. Can't remember the year it was. And just kind of all eyes on Batu at that point. Then again, similar story, the year or two before the pandemic, I saw Batu headline the Greenhouse stage. Again, 3 hours of just excellence. He also played a headline Boiler Room set that year. And he was the one doing that thing where you were like, yeah, and I remember sort of thinking like, yeah, it'll be him next. You know, he'll be doing this. And when he got announced that he was getting that throne, headlining Detmantle Festival, so happy and so excited. And we all were, because we all had tickets at this point, you know. And it was such a shame to see that, you know, not come to pass at the time. But pandemic or no pandemic, no matter, the throne awaited for Batu on the Sunday night. And it was a nice point in the festival, because at this point we'd not seen a full set. I don't think, have we, mate? We just jumped around and seen like parts. But it was just like, we knew at that point that there was no messing about.
Yeah. Batu, a second of that.
Only. You know, even with the likes of Juliana Huxtable, Heron Sauna, Willikins and Ivkovic, Sherelle, Object and Cool Super playing at the same time.
Oh, God.
Right? Insane, but it had to be Bristol Babe Batu headlining. And did Batu come through, Will, in your opinion?
No, it was a bit rubbish. No, I'm joking. Of course, he was incredible. Everything I could have expected it to be. It was really fun as well. It was just such a fun set. Like, I think last time I'd seen Batu was that night in Bristol, at the Trinity Centre, where he'd played Trinity a really Center. Long set.
Time dance.
And it was
birthday, yeah.
A very captivating set, but it was like a slow, murky builder of a set.
It's a warm-up set.
Yeah, it was the warm-up set. Mm. And
complete opposite, yeah.
And this time, like, so from seeing him then to this, it was like a whole different vibe, as you'd expect. This time he just like bought it. It was just Shellers from front to back. Huge. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. It was
triumphant.
Triumphant, like you say. What I admired about that set so much was the fact that he just looked like, you know, he looked like he was just made for that his entire life. Like, he looked so calm. That wry little cheeky smile of Batu's that comes out every now and again was popping out on a few occasions when he'd drop a big tune or there was a big break and the crowd would, you know, sort of kind of roar. And you could tell that he was like so excited and so kind of like sort of not bewildered isn't the right word, but kind of struck by the occasion. But that didn't come across in his performance at all. You know, there were moments where you got a peek behind the mask and you were like, oh yeah, Batu's like, he's like gassed to be doing this right now. But his mixing, selection, presence was just clinical, perfect. And what I loved is how he took the kind of the left field bass weirdness that Time Dance and Batu you would associate with and refined it to like main stage devastation. You know, it wasn't watered down, but it was like streamlined to absolute, like,
yeah,
Shelley effect, as you say. Yeah, it was a triumph and it was a joy. It was so great to finish the festival with that, like that one thing, be like, Batu, nobody else today, sorry. Not because we don't love him, but just because this sort of really means something quite special. You know, this is quite special, and for him to bring it in the way he did, it was a fitting end. Final thoughts on Batu, pal?
Yeah, stole the show.
And just, yeah, in the Sunday.
I mean, Sunday was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
I just think that whole day, I don't think, I mean, I'd be very impressed if I ever witness a whole day of electronic music that lives up to that day.
Yeah, it would take some moving, I think. I don't think I've seen it. Not even at Deckmantle. That was a serious day.
Just like the variety, and if you take into account the different stages, and then to just like finish it with Batu headlining. Nah, you ain't beaten that.
Ridiculous.
It has done.
It was class. And
electronic music is finished done. Now. There's no point.
Yeah, it is. This show cannot go on. Awake All Hours after 56 episodes. There is no
we
more
are
to
retiring.
Be said. No, we are. Oh my gosh. It was really good. And you know, to kind of round off now the chat on this set of the weekend for you, pal.
Who's I mean it be? Was Batu.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I think it was Batu. For all the reasons that have just been spoken about, you know, that kind of says it all. But as well, I do want to shout out the likes of Mama Snake.
Mm.
Unbelievable. You know, there was so many high. I mean, I really, basically, everyone we've just talked about put them in the runners up to yes. the set of the weekend, really. Every single person.
Exactly.
Because everyone did. Shouts to every single artist. And we've only scratched the surface. Like, we are only two humans. We have not seen, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Sort of
I have
a quarter of the people who played.
I have 100% no doubt that we could have literally seen none of the sets that we've discussed here, just gone to different things the whole time.
Yeah.
And maybe it wouldn't be, you know, like exactly the same, just because I feel like Batu was pretty special Sunday night. But also, then again, you had like Cool Super and Object headlining the Boiler Room. You had all the other ones yeah. that were listed. Heron Sauna, I think, would have been pretty crazy.
Yeah, I bet that was incredible.
But, yeah, you could have just done like so many different iterations of that festival, and I think it would have been heavenly each time.
Very well said. Yes, agreed. And final little discussion on this then, because I think we've had a little chat about this already off air, and we've touched on some people who I think are definitely in the contention for this, but future headliners next year or in the coming sort of couple few years, who do you see? Who's your money on, mate?
People that I think are on the big rise. The number one for me, I think, has to be Anz. Like, just every time I've seen her, it's just always been like raucous energy. And like, she always exceeds my expectations, even though my expectations are always very high. And I just think like the way just the crowd is always just, you know, so up for it. I think she just would be able to deliver the goods for a headline set. I do wonder, like I think she does seem very suited to like, few times I've seen her has been like in that kind of like mid-afternoon, early evening slot. So sometimes you do think like it is a little bit different headlining, you know, it's a slightly different vibe. So I do wonder how that would translate. But equally, yeah, I have 100% faith that Anz would navigate a headline set.
Yeah.
With ease, really.
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. Anz would be a shoo-in for me also. Anybody else?
The other two discussed LSDXOXO.
Yeah.
Just because I just think as a producer and an artist now, he's like, you know, just really top of his game. And as a DJ as well. And I just feel like it really is, again, it's like his time completely. I do, again, wonder, like, he's another one, like Anz, he's just, like, so much fun. Does he have the? Well, no. It's like I was going to say, like, does he have the kind of like oomph? But I think he definitely does. Like, I've seen him in various, you know, doing various slots at festivals, at club nights, and like even like a LSDXOXO like live show would be crazy to see. I mean, I don't think you could do a whole headline set of that, but some, yeah, yeah, I think he's definitely got the variety and the capabilities. And then the final one we were discussing, which would be a bit of a curveball for Deck Mantle, because I don't think they're really prone to having a lot of jungle as their primary, like jungle and footwork as their primary like headline slot. But Sherrow, like surely the come up has been so huge for Sherrow that it would just make sense.
Yeah, that's got to happen someday.
And it would be like a really ambitious like booking, but also one that would just, you know, you couldn't argue with it either. And like headlining
yeah,
the Nest
incredible.
And her Boiler Room, like we weren't there for either, but supposedly a massive success both. So I think those three, I couldn't see them all. I wouldn't see them all three of them being like headliners together, obviously, but they're all very capable of achieving the slot, I think.
Yeah. And I think we're guaranteed to see one of them at least next year.
Mm.
That I would put my mortgage on it. Richard Dunn set piece.
Put your mortgage on it.
But also, I just want to throw in as well, I do think Aquarian, maybe, I'm not entirely sure when, but I do think sometime, based on the just how proficient that headline set was in the UFO 2, and also Deck Mantle affiliate with the releases on their label, the what are they called? The Mutations records that he's put out? I know you're a big fan of them. You know, and again, I think that often counts for something. Deck Mantle, like actual Deck Mantle roster as well. That usually...
He's one of their own.
You often see them pop up. He's one of our own. Exactly. So there you go. Predictions for 2023 and pre-registration for the festival is open. I have done so and I shall be attending. So see you there. See you in 2023. And do you think you go back, mate, after all that? Whether it's next year or another year, you think you'd return?
Certainly. I'm sincerely hoping that they'll give us a free ticket after all that promotion. Yeah. They better.
That's actually why we're doing this.
No, I certainly would. I would go back in a heartbeat. It's one of those ones as well, like, I think when I've like reflected on it more as well, it's just only kind of, the more I thought about it, the more I thought, yeah, that just really was like a pretty faultless festival. Apart from the aforementioned wasps and lack of signposts in the forest, etc. But it was so good. I'd definitely have to go back.
I would recommend it to anybody who is just super, super into electronic music. And maybe there's something about making that very humble, but still a pilgrimage over the channel to spend 3 days in the boss with, you know, electronic music solely. Like, it's a really special experience. It's a special festival. And if you love your electronic music, you know, as much as we do, and you haven't attended, consider it. You'll have a really good time. Guaranteed. So yeah, that was Deck Mantle 2022. We've talked for a while about it. Brief roundup, only an hour long. So, as always, these episodes are getting longer the more there is to talk about these days. So I will be putting the timestamps of each section in the description. If you do want to, it's a bit late now because you've sat through an hour of Deck Mantle chat. But if you want to skip to another bit, or feel free to take a break and come back later. You know, this is the purpose of these long form podcasts. You don't have to do it all in one. If you do,
what?
I mean, yeah, I mean, no, God bless you.
Set them a challenge. Come on. Yeah. I only want people to be listening to it all in one. If you're not
all
doing
in one,
that, you're a
or
fake
not
fan.
At all.
No plastics incredible. On my podcast.
That's it. That is it. So, from one glorious electronic music pilgrimage to another. I would like to quickly talk about the Trezor 31 exhibition and one party, briefly, of the kind of 2 months of programming that the legendary Berlin institution Trezor has been putting on to celebrate their 31st year of existence. I can only assume that they were going to celebrate 30, but because of the pandemic, yeah, they couldn't, because 31 is that an unusual number to celebrate, but fair play to them, you know, better late than never. And they have been celebrating with an exhibition at the Kraftwerk building, which is the sort of complex where they have Trezor and Ohm and Globus and the Kraftwerk building. It's sort of the kind of Trezor complex of all their club spaces. They've been running an exhibition and curating a vast and stacked series of parties sort of each weekend for, I think it's run for basically 2 months. And I saw this, wow, and I thought, oh my God, I would love to go out for that. I would so love to. That is a little bit of me. And that piece of history, that corner of electronic music, you know, particularly the sort of the techno boom in Berlin in the sort of in the early 90s post Berlin Wall, is a piece of history. A, the general history of around the Berlin Wall is fascinating, but as well, the way that techno and electronic music directly coalesce with that is something that fascinates me massively. So I was sat in my room in Bristol one day and I thought I'd love to go out for that, but it felt unattainable. But then it dawned on me, a light bulb went off above my head, and I thought, hang on a minute, Amsterdam to Berlin can't be too difficult. If I'm out there for Detmantel, maybe I can go for the Trezor stuff. And a plan blossomed, a spontaneous light bulb moment, a plan blossomed. And I thought, I'm doing it. I'm going. This is a one-off. I must make a second pilgrimage. And I'm so glad I did. Took myself down to Berlin, or across or up to Berlin, for a few days of sort of kind of rest, relaxation, soaking in the city, a city that I do, again, adore for the aforementioned reasons and my past visits. I love Berlin a lot, which was great, and hung out and saw the city and whatnot. And on the Thursday after Detmantel, which finished on the Sunday, went to book to go to the Trezor 31 exhibition, which is called Trezor 31 Techno Berlin und die große Freiheit, which I believe translates to Techno Berlin and the big freedom. Roughly, if I'm translating that horribly. Yeah, and the Great Freedom or something like that. Grand Freedom. And so essentially this was a celebration of, again, the, you know, as Dmitry Hegman actually says, the co-founder of Trezor, along with the late Regina Beyer, says in the exhibition, he says, this is a kind of exhibition about techno and about unused spaces, and how the kind of the focal point for all of this was Trezor in Berlin. And it was a fascinating and brilliant exhibition. As you go in, the Kraftwerk building is this sort of massive old printing hall almost. It's the closest thing that I can get you to picture in your head, if you are from the UK and you know London, etc. Is Printworks. It's that kind of printing hall-esque, huge, cavernous, pillared building with these kind of windows in the ceiling that the kind of sunlight comes through, and it's epic. It's vast, you know, it just kind of feels huge. Really, really spectacular building, and the perfect home for Trezor, which had to move, in actual fact, from its original home in the sort of 2000s, again, because of development and stuff. You go in and you get given these headphones. It's a fantastic exhibition to do solo, actually, because you get given these sort of huge space-age headphones, and they react to sensors in the room, in the Kraftwerk building, so that you've constantly got this kind of hum of sort of techno and ambient noise in your ears. But as you approach a video, the audio starts playing for that video. So you can, as you walk around the exhibition, you're getting kind of beamed these like transmissions through the exhibition, which is a really cool thing. I've never really seen that before, and is a super kind of, it was really expertly done and a nice touch. And the exhibition kind of comprised of videos on the kind of the past, present, and sort of future of, again, like Berlin techno unused spaces. And in fact, funnily enough, the first video is dedicated entirely to Fold in London, which is really funny. The first video I saw anyway, there's kind of like on the first floor, there's three floors in the building. On the first floor, it was this video sort of document, again, Filmmaker, I believe, Rebecca Salvadori is the filmmaker. I believe, I hope I've got Rebecca's name right, or the filmmaker's name right, because they make incredible sort of documentaries, usually club culture and rave culture adjacent. And it was really sick to see Fold get a kind of prime spot in this exhibition, again, about sort of the unused space of where Fold is, the fact that Fold is in kind of the back end of nowhere in Canning Town, and how, you know, it's kind of empty, but also super exciting because of this sort of space, you know, and the fact that, again, likenesses like Fold has a 24-hour license, the fact that they throw their Unfold, their kind of infamous Unfold parties, those daytime parties, which are a big sort of feature in the film also. It was super interesting, and again, kind of tied into like the future of this sort of culture that Trezor kind of spawned back in the day and still stands for. It was really sick. And then multiple videos about just the history of Trezor, you know, how Regina Baer and Dimitri Hegman and others sort of found the original vault in the kind of remains of a huge department building in Berlin, and how they kind of, you know, they sort of document kind of walking into this bank vault that's just completely abandoned, and it's the Trezor, the vault, you know, which kind of became. And also really great videos documenting the Detroit connection. There was a fantastic video about like how, you know, the how inseparable Detroit and Berlin are to one another, and how Trezor was sort of so integral in kind of bringing people like Blake Baxter and Jeff Mills and Robert Hood, Underground Resistance, etc., over to Europe, and gave them a kind of a den, kind of, I suppose, to play in. So there was just copious amounts of brilliant interviews and brilliant videos documenting, yeah, like say the kind of like techno's history as a whole, you know, as again, it was a sort of from the D Mecca, as someone put in one of the videos, that, you know, and the kind of protagonist in this documentary was saying how you can't sort of dance to techno, or anyone that dances techno can't sort of spare a thought for like the Temptations and, you know, and the Bellevue Three, and, you know, and sort of everyone from, you know, soul giants to like the founding heads of techno period out of like Detroit specifically, and then how Trezor was kind of a bridge. And it was just like, if you are a kind of a nerd for that thing like I am, it was heaven. I spent 3 hours in there just waltzing around. On the second floor, it was a bit more kind of artsy videos, a bit more kind of conceptual stuff, but there was some great like artifacts, like photographs from like the golden age of Trezor, and like really fascinating faxes from Dimitri Hegman to people such as Jeff Mills, like sort of saying like, hi Jeff, how's it going? Like, yeah, we're gonna put out this release on our label, like hope you're well, like get back to me mate, like I'm waiting on you and stuff like that. It was so funny, so fascinating to see like these communications between like, yeah, Berlin and Detroit, and it was awesome. And then on the top floor, they had this sort of huge sand sculpture of what I infer is kind of a sort of arty interpretation of the old Trezor, kind of like the ruins of where Trezor was, because they had sort of like a big vault door, but then this kind of sand sculpture in the kind of shadows of the Kraftwerk building. And yeah, it was just super immersive and fascinating. You know, I haven't done it justice in the short sort of time I've been speaking about it here, but you can read more about it. And also I would recommend anybody who is listening to this to read De Klang der Familie, which is a book basically about this exact period of time, Berlin, techno, and the fall of the wall. And it's such a great read. It's fascinating. And it really documents this kind of, this period of time. Yeah, so that was amazing. And then that just bloomin' tickled my palate to go and attend on the Friday following one of their Trezor 31 parties, which again was spectacular. And Will, you've been to Trezor, you know the vault.
Yes, I know it well.
The fateful vault.
Well, no, I don't know it well. I went once.
How was your experience in the vault?
So I've got very fond memories only of that vault. It feels like one of those places that really only exists in a dream. I've got very fond memories of swigging glasses of Prosecco in a dungeon.
Yeah.
Like 9 a.m. or something stupid. But yeah. What a place.
That's funny you say about sort of 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, because I went to, so on this particular night, they had all four pieces of the Trezor complex open, the Kraftwerk building, Ohm, Globus and Trezor. And the lineup was crazy. Again, another draw. 3D Dancer, Giant Swan, Mafu, Par Grindvik, SOS Gunvor Ryberg, Seafrim, Gigster, Object Blue, Paper Cuts, Yusu, DJ Shuffle Master, Roxy Moore, Shed, Wata Igarashi, Antens, Gaja, Rebecca, and Rose across the four stages, the four rooms of the Trezor complex. And I got down really early, like unconventionally early for Berliners, I would say. Like, I know that in Berlin, you know, like, it's like literally like one of the first through the door. It got to about 9 o'clock and I was like, yeah, I'm not going to wait any longer. I've got to go. So I got down for about 10 o'clock and caught Mafu, who was brilliant, opened up the Kraftwerk stage, which again just kind of feels endless. It feels like you're in this sort of huge, you know, kind of endless building. And Mafu kind of played some great sort of rolling techno and kind of more like Guam leaning stuff as well. It was pretty sick. But then made a beeline for the Ohm room, which is probably my favorite room. Nearly favorite room. I'll get onto that in a minute, but my favorite room of at least three, which is kind of this white tiled square. And it feels like this, yeah, it's just sort of what it's kind of like, you know, the whore Berlin toilet that they stream the DJ sets from, the kind of white tiled. It's like a big one of those. It's kind of that sort of white tiled square. And they also have like this square bar in it. So you kind of have like this 360 bar in this square. It's like a square and a square. And then the kind of dance floor is offset slightly. But went down to catch the aforementioned Yusu, this time in the club. Club debut for Yusu. And just as good, like incredible, just as sick in a club at night as on Selectors. Quickly followed by Object Blue, who I'd also never seen. A lot of debuts for me personally. Object Blue, who was absolutely killer. And I got a tip off from my friend Maddie while I was in Berlin. And she was like, do you know Gigster? I was like, I don't know Gigster, actually. I'm not familiar with Gigster. Apparently Gigster, like, she doesn't take any flights. She's very into, like, you know, like green traveling for DJ. She just has a very limited social media presence. And probably set of the night for me. Absolutely incredible. Like, veering from straight bassline to like hypnotic techno, like it was crazy. It was, and you know, and by this time it was getting early, you know, it was getting early, so the kind of the more part-time punters had maybe started to fizzle away, and the slightly more seasoned Berliners and just me, who was just sort of hanging out like not as cool by any stretch of the imagination, were kind of getting super loose to Gigster. And it was an incredible set, finished with like some transcendent jungle, and was just a wicked club set, one of the best club sets I've seen. So keep an eye on Gigster for sure. Thank you, Maddie, for that. But and it's kind of funny, because I went to go to Trezor, but I only spent probably about an hour in the vault, again because Ohm was so sick. And I, about, Gigster finished at 7 o'clock. And I was like, right, now it's time. Now it's time. So I got myself a little water and I tropes down the kind of hallway. And if you remember, we were like the hallway into Trezor has kind of got like, it's sort of like you're going into a mine, and then they've got like these pulsing lights that kind of, kind of rush past you as if you're going into like a vault, like, which is exactly what you are doing, but it's kind of got, and you just hear the kind of, and you're like, oh my God, oh my God. And stepping foot into the Trezor, like at like 7 o'clock in the morning was magic, mate. It was so good. And by that time, you know, we are now into like in Berlin, everything's just getting going, really. And, you know, it's running till midday and everyone's going, and everyone's having a rather nice time. Everyone's in the vault. And at this point, I wanted to go because Rebecca was playing. Rebecca, who was playing just murderous techno. And it was a really, it sounds really, you know, sort of contrived, but it was a really spiritual moment. I've got to say, like, again, for all the reasons I've talked about, making that pilgrimage and being so kind of obsessed with that kind of bit of electronic history, to walk into Trezor in full throttle at like 7 a.m. with Rebecca channeling what I can only sort of in my head and from the kind of videos and the sort of artifacts of that exhibition and from what I've read and sort of studied about Trezor, like capturing that pure techno energy, that like fierce, uncompromising energy of Trezor in her set was special. Like, it was unbelievable and just so good to kind of have it out. Well, as long as my weary bones could manage, which wasn't till the end, because I don't have that in me. But it was glorious. It was fake Berliner, exactly. Part timer, no doubt. But it was really special, and that's the review. That's sort of at. Ali goes to Berlin and has quite a nice time.
That sounds pretty heavenly. I wish I'd done weekend number heavenly. 2 as well.
Well, what I'm going to do is do exactly the same again next year. So that's
next time.
I've decided that I will make it an annual thing of that. Just hop over pilgrimage. To Berlin.
Yeah,
the double bill pilgrimage that for
makes
sure.
Sense.
It's incredible. And Berlin, goddamn you do. Frustratingly, for as good as you are, kind of ruin clubbing, because like when you have an experience, when you go to a club like that and it's like 8 o'clock in the morning and it's kind of just warming up and that energy is so unmatched. Like, I just don't think in sort of general life, there are not many experiences like that, like that are as intense as what I felt in there, as kind of smothering and aggressive, but as unifying and thrilling and exhilarating and euphoric and connecting. Like, that is a feeling that I think you can only get in clubbing through electronic music and in certain spaces and times. And yeah, that at that moment, it was one of those times, you know, and yeah, it's the reason why we do this, eh? I suppose it's the reason we do it. So it's still going on. There's still time. You can still fly out. If you listen,
I'm literally going
to
book my plane tickets as soon as we're done here.
Yeah.
That sounds so good.
Listen, I would go again. It was a really nice sort of secondary pilgrimage. I did think to myself, maybe I'll do a few other events in Berlin. You know, do like the do the Friday, Saturday, Sunday Berliner style. No way. My you people are. A cut from a different cloth, I tell you. But anyway, moving on. That was from Amsterdam to Berlin. And we had ourselves a lovely time, didn't we, mate? It was good. It was good. Awake all hours on tour. Until next time,
tour.
I suppose.
Just a little
hop over.
That exhibition as well sounded really great.
The exhibition was a
I'd
real
love to
treat.
See
yeah.
if any of that... any of the footage and the videos become available anywhere to see.
One thing I do know for sure. Actually, it's just gone. So I do know that Fold showed 2 of the videos at Unfold that's just gone. So they might show that. I don't know if that will hopefully be a recurring thing, or if the videos and the documentaries, the little mini docs, can be found elsewhere. But
like,
I do hope, and I'm
do
almost
it
certain.
On sort of like a tour thing at some point. Who knows? You know,
I'm
like
sure that
it,
they'll
bring
archive
it to a different gallery or something. That would be really cool. I have to keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, I would hope so. But it was magic. Oof, so magic. I've done a little belch. Anyways, on to reviews. So now we're going to do... taking this long. We're going to do truncated, quick... fire reviews here. We can keep it slick, buddy. We can do this. You know, we've had big talking points. I've rambled on about Berlin a bit too much and got a bit excited, so it's time to blitz through Emeka Ogbo and Thug Widow, our 2 albums for today. I'm not going to say the title of the Emeka Ogbo album because it's just coordinates. Say it. 6 degrees, 33.372 inches?
What?
North,
what
3 degrees, 22.
Do we know?
The coordinates R4, it's funny you should say that, Bunny, because that's a perfect segue. The coordinates R4, after reading of the press notes, for a bus station in Lagos called Odualegba. Odualegba. And this follows Emeka Ogbo's really great record on Oscar Ton, the in-house label of Berghain called Beyond the Yellow Haze, which I think was actually, and if I'm not mistaken, I may be wrong, was actually an exhibition in Berghain initially, or was kind of the sound from that exhibition that Emeka Ogbo kind of curated or was responsible for. Anyway, it was wicked. Loved that album. It was in end of year list whenever that came out, like 2020. And combining sort of dub techno and halftime drum and bass isms with field recordings, very, very dense field recordings, straight out of Lagos. And the press notes for this album basically say, whereas the last one was kind of a bit more of a macro view of Lagos as a whole, this one is like a micro view zooming in on the coordinates, which are of a bus station. And sort of its surrounding environs, as it says, which is a super cool thing. And I think what Emeka Ogbo's work does is occupy a very unique sonic space. Like, I think field recordings, electronic music, combinations of the two, it's not like a new concept, but the specificness. Yeah. I'm not sure how it's the right word. Specificness. The kind of specific to Lagos, and again, like how specific, particularly in this case, Emeka Ogbo is going with his work is kind of incredible and makes something truly unique. I really love this album. I loved Beyond the Yellow Haze, and I think that this does a great job of building on the incredible foundations of that album, but with maybe a bit more ambitious production, field recordings taking like center stage rather than just being part of the kind of sound tapestry. And I think the album is at its best when it does that. So that's my kind of brief get-go. How about you, mate?
Yeah, I thought this was really cool. This is my first time that I've listened to Emeka Ogbo. And I wasn't really sure about any of the details of this other than field recordings, Lagos. I didn't know it was like specifically at bus stop and like one specific place, but I think that makes total sense now. I think it's really cool. The way the sort of field recordings work combined, you know, with the production. And like, I think there's some moments specifically, I think in the middle, like Ayalara, I think was the one that kind of really stood out to me as a instance where you kind of, it's just so layered that you kind of lose track of what is like field recording and what is like instrumentation. And there's like in that song, I think it's Ayalara. It might be one of the other ones because I've only listened to this like once or twice. But it's got this sound like that I thought, oh, it sounds like that's like traffic. But the more I listen to it, the more it sounds like some sort of like, I don't know, like a synth or something. And it's like, is that like a digital sound or is that like actual field recordings? And I think there's a lot of, and this is also one where the vocals are layered to an extent where in terms of, if you have the actual just like the beat, and you had that on its own, not a lot would happen. Like, it's a nice beat, but it would just sort of plod along. But this one, it really, like, the vocals are just layered on top of each other, and, like, it just seems so, like, expertly crafted that, like, it has this, like, real high build-up of energy. And I think, like, I'm choosing this one just because, like, I think that was, like a particular standout moment where it does that, and maybe, like, a bit of a crescendo as well. I felt like where it was the kind of the most high energy moment on the album. But I think just like what really struck me was just the detail and like how finely crafted this seems. Like, it feels like at the same time, very naturalistic in the sense that it does just feel like a lot of it is sort of like natural conversations and things you are just hearing as if you were actually in that place. But then it also at the same time just feels so meticulously crafted that everything just sort of makes sense and works together, like flows together so swimmingly. And that was something that really struck me, because I just feel like I've not heard field recordings used too often to that great effect in that way.
Yeah.
So it did really impress me. That's like my first sort of takeaway from it.
Nice. Yeah, no, I totally agree with the fact that I think Emeka Ogbo's use of field recordings is unparalleled, I think, in a way. Like to what I have heard anyway, like you say, like you've heard them used from time to time, maybe as an interlude or as a kind of ambient passage, but to hear them, how intertwined they are here, like they are so integral to this, to the sound and to the, you know, to the kind of the concept of this album. I straight up love this. It's just a great sequel, I think, to Yellow Haze, as I've said. And my highlights are when the slightly different approach on this is when the kind of the field recordings are like used as a rhythmic instrument and take kind of center stage. So first case of that is in Wall, the second track two after the intro, which is an instant highlight for me, because you've got this like chugging, syncopated, like organic dub techno rhythm track with the samples and field recording sort of intertwined so masterfully, but they're used as like, they are used like a kind of, like a rapper would use their voice over the kind of rhythm. It's so sick. It's such an interesting use of them. Same on Verbal Drift, although, you know, again, what I like about this is because it's very dance floor informed. Like, you know, you've got these like dub atmospheres and these swirling field recordings, which are a little bit more kind of like swirling rather than front and center this time, with the African syncopation and this like rim shot hook, which is sick, and everything just crescendos brilliantly. I think that's when, for me, this album is at its greatest. Although when it does go a little bit more kind of a la Yellow Haze, like one of your standouts, Ayilara, which I do love, kind of a little steppy, a little more anxious. The other one being like Oju 2.0, which is kind of like the ambient epic of the album, the kind of Emeka in full field recording mode. But it's, everything is composed so masterfully. I love in that track Oju, there's this like motorcycle rev that is then like caked in like granular echo. And it's like this very, very clearly like that's a motorbike going past, but then it kind of becomes part of the sort of sonic tapestry, you know, and there's so many uses of that. How Emeka blends everything together is so good. It's great. I love as well No Counterfeit, I think is great. Again, you got like a kind of a low tempo, 100 BPM sort of tubular techno chugger. And it's at this point as well with We Die Here as well, or We Die Higher, which has again like a kind of super sparse halftime drum and bass leaning. I think that this is a cool album as well, because in the hands of some adventurous DJs, this would be really cool to see how someone could like blend this in with a bit of halftime drum and bass, or just in a kind of lower tempo, like techno, more atmospheric techno set. It's really exciting to see how, like, say, some adventurous DJs may like use that. And I think it would be so cool in a mix, you know, like some of this stuff as well. Ticks all the boxes. I love this project. I think it's great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very cool. I like it a lot. I think one other thing I noticed is like I feel like a lot of the samples, you know, are used on various different tunes. Like I think there's one in particular, like one vocal sample,
yeah,
just like of a bloke saying something, and it's like recurs on like not every tune, I don't think, but it could be every tune, to be fair. But just like used in like different ways, like sped up. Sometimes it's in the background. And it's like spoken a lot, and it's like this. It's very noticeable that he is like using this one sample over and over again. But it like it is just always used in like quite a refreshing way, and it's just really cool. And I think like the way that it's like it just makes total sense now. Yeah, like knowing that it is just all from like a bus stop, in that it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like sort of showing off like, this is all of the different sound that I can do with just things that I've recorded here, and even just like this one like sample of someone speaking, I'm just going to use it so much, but like in like creative different ways, and it's like never really going to get tiring. Pretty impressive piece of work.
Very impressive piece of work, very singular piece of work, very masterful piece of work, I think. And I'm excited to see, because this is also notably released on Emeka Ogbo's new label called Danfotronics, which I think is going to be dedicated to, I think, just African experimental music, or there or thereabouts. I can't quite remember the quote or find the quote now in front of me, but that's really exciting. You know, something unique, awesome platform for kind of similar projects. And I'm really excited to see kind of like the next chapter in this particular exploration. Like, you know, I'm really curious to see how, what Emeka Ogbo zooms in on next, but also where he takes his production as well. I think is really, really exciting. It's a really unique project and well worth checking out if you haven't already. I think maybe some listeners might lose patience with how patient some of this is, if you know what I mean. Like some of it is very slow burn and super immersive, but yeah, it's, if you give it the time, like, I think it's well worth it. Definitely. That is Emeka Ogbo with Big String of Coordinates, AKA,
the bus stop of Lagos.
AKA exactly. I've lost the name now as well of this bus stop. It's really, really frustrating. Oju Alegba, you could say as well. So moving swiftly on, look at this. Look at this for swift truncated reviewing. Thug Widow, nice. Seventh Circle of
George
Litmus
guy
on Western
Law.
He's
always dragging us on.
dragging us down with his insight. And his good, his God interesting damn. Dissections of albums. Oh, slowing the show down.
Why can't you just say an album's good and move on?
We've just got to keep it, you and I are keeping it swift with our lack of insight and lack of detail. George, we're just kidding, pal. We love you. We love you. Thug Widow, Seventh Circle of Litmus, Western Law. Will. I'm going to let you come in with this one, buddy, because you are a Thug Widow fan, I would say, on after Hoover Sound, recent Hoover Sound release.
Yeah, I would say to an
which you bought and you loved. So Thug Widow, what did you make going into this album?
I was quite excited. Thug Widow is somebody that I see about all the time, like on all of the, like the labels where you'd expect him to be. He'd previously, like, this isn't his first release on Western Law. He's had releases on like Warehouse Rave, like Lobster Theremin, I think, like Sneaker Social Club, and most recently on Hoover Sound. And then like, I was like, oh, I've only heard like Thug Widow EPs before. Like, I wonder like how many albums, like, if he's released albums before. And his, like, he has been so prolific. He's released so much music in like the last 5 years. It's quite crazy. So like, I'm not going to call myself a Thug Widow fan, because I've probably listened to like 10% of his music. But wow, what I have listened to, I've liked. He's like, yeah, a master of ambient, atmospheric jungle, for the most part. And I was very excited for this on the back of that Hoover Sound one, which I think from the music I had listened to of his, was probably my favourite release. It really delved into the kind of grittier, sort of, you know, moodier, sludgier, smokier side of the kind of atmospheric jungle, and the, like, and two-step as well. It was like, you know, I likened it to Burial in my review, and I think that very much, compared to like other sides of his music that I've heard before, like that felt very much like a kind of, not an ode to Burial, but you know, that sort of urban sludge. And this, I feel like, is a little bit different. It's more in line with actually what I'd heard before of Thug Widow. I mean, it's not like worlds apart. Obviously, it's like, it's still like atmospheric jungle. But this has got kind of like a real sort of like space agey, like mystic, like fantastical kind of feel to it. Like in some ways it's very like old school ravey, obviously, you know. It's not like completely alien, but just in terms of atmosphere, it's quite like cinematic a lot of the time, like some big epic like moments on this. And one of the albums like that it did remind me of in many ways, which I didn't even add two and two together. I was listening to this and I was like, oh, you know, this is kind of like that Eusebia album. And that literally was the last album released on Western Law. So obviously this is a very good home for this sort of music, clearly. So that was, that made a lot of sense when I added that two and two together. But yeah, this album I was excited for. And for the most part, I have enjoyed. It's quite a lengthy one. It's like over an hour long, hour and 10 minutes or something. And, you know, it does explore all the depths of atmospheric jungle. And it's a lot of fun. What were your thoughts going into this, Ali?
It's nice. Yeah, I like this one a lot. I do like this. Western Law, which is the label belonging to Dead Man's Chest, based out of Bristol. I think, like Bristol itself, is kind of... the music on there is kind of dirty and crusty in the best kind of way, you know. I think it sort of sings its city in that kind of great way, which I love. And I'm saying that with real, you know, with adoration. I it's the city I have chosen to make my home in, so I'm not just mugging off Bristol. I love Bristol. But it kind of... it's sort of like lost transmissions from the 90s. It kind of feels Western Law, like that Eusebia album felt like that. A lot of their releases do feel very kind of classic, but sort of like lost and found in a way, which I think is really cool. I think this album definitely is that too. Very much leaning on the reduced atmospheric ambient sort of jungle type sort of thing. It's perhaps not, in my opinion, Western Law, it's not quite as memorable as the Eusebia album. I like that one a bit more, I think. But there are some real highlights littered across the track list. I like dissociative funk a lot. The atmospheric jungle with this great piano hook that would kind of, if you polish that up and put that on a special request tune, I don't think you'd notice the difference. You know, that big piano kind of hook on that one. United Kingdom with its murky, murky bass wubs and like sparse breaks. Really dread-inducing. What are the highlights? Funkiest Funk. I love the kind of unique processing of the, I think, a 909 drum machine on that. And it's basically just like a kind of funky, ravey drum tool, which I think is really cool. Contrary to popular opinion, I think, is my highlight. I love that track.
That one's class.
Really sparse, rude, anxious, bass bin tickler, but with a seriously, almost like hilariously rude second phase.
Yeah.
Like the second phase of that track is like, oh, what? Where did this come from on this album? It's really fat. It's cool. Yeah, I like that. I also think similarly highly of Light on Earth. I think the second half has got some real highlights. Light on Earth, really beautiful atmospheric jungle with anthemic, with a really anthemic bass. It's a really strong selection of, say, reduced ambient jungle. And again, I don't know if, like, as a long player, this is not like the Emeka Ogbo album where I would chuck this on in headphones and walk about to it and get loads of joy out of it. But I would 100%, if I was a jungle drum and bass DJ, I would be loading my bag with some of these, definitely. And I'm sure plenty already are who are in the know.
I agree with most of what you just said there. I do think, it's a long album and it doesn't like feel like an album. Like, you don't feel like there's a great attention to detail in terms of really like the direction of it as a whole project. You know, it sort of stays at like a kind of 7-8 out of 10 like energy level kind of throughout, you know. It's not like it goes like up and down, and like it's a lot of teasing as well, I think, with this album. There's like a lot of times where I'm thinking like, oh, it's going to get like seriously like sluggish, like not sluggish, like really huge. And there's like only a few moments where like it really does like pack a huge punch, I think. Contrary to popular opinion, it definitely is one of them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
But I really like that track, just how like subtle and like low-key this first half is. It's literally just like skittering drums and like the odd little bleep bloop, and then just goes stupid like in the second half. But like, yeah, I would say, yeah, there's not a huge amount of like variety here. It's not like really doing anything like crazy original or anything, but it is just like a really solid collection of tracks. Like there's not really much on here that I would like, I wouldn't say I don't like anything, specifically here. Like I think everything's pretty great, pretty solid, and it's literally only £7 on Bandcamp. So if you are like a jungle DJ, then like, yeah, go grab this because it's pretty solid.
Definitely. Yeah. 100%. Western Law, great, great label as well. If you are interested in that sound, go back and dig through the archives because, yeah, fantastic label out of Bristol. And yeah, check that Eusebia album as well, which we reviewed at the beginning of this year, I think, like one of the first episodes of 2022, which we really loved as well and is sick. So, yeah, lovely stuff for the most part. And we finish, as ever, with a brief but banging What's in My Bandcamp Basket. I can see you wiping the sweat from your brow. I am doing the same. It's got
Why is it somehow so hot again?
Crazy hot. I don't know how this happened. Like, it was actually kind of cool when we started, yeah. And it's gotten obscenely hot. It's like quarter past 10 in the evening. So we're going to keep this... It's hot. It's really hot. So we're going to keep this short and sweet, A, to keep this within 2 hours, and B, so we don't perish. Right. Will... What is in your Bandcamp basket, pal?
Okay, my Bandcamp basket. First of all, I'm going for one of two that you've turned me on to here, which is, I'll start with Ill Behaviour 7, which is by Mior, which is just Coco Bryce, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm aware anyway. It's like two sides... Side A and side B, and they're both like super fun bootlegs. At least the second one is. I don't know what the sampling is on the first one. The second one is a bootleg of If I Ever Fall in Love Again. I can't remember who that's by, you know, that R&B classic. It's very fun and vibey, and apparently Sherelle dropped this in her boiler room and it was huge, apparently. So I'll look forward to listening to that whole set when that's released. Or maybe it is now. But I actually prefer the first side on this, I think. It's like proper soulful, very sunny, whole lot of fun, excellent two-tracker of fun bootlegs. Now I'm also going to shout out Slickback. He always delivers. This is EP is called Type. It's four tracks and it's like 10 minutes long. It's like short and sweet, but like he just packs so much into this 10 minutes. My two highlights off it are Mien, which is like probably his like most brutal moment. It's got huge, it's just what you expect from Slipback, really. Very big booming bass, like very tough, sharp snares, and this like crazy contorted, like screaming sort of distortion throughout. It's like pretty overwhelming, but in like the best way. And then also the closer on this, the final track, Crash, is like really cinematic. That other side to Slipback, where you feel like he could like, just the production is like so pristine, like he could sort of like score films, like big like Marvel films or something, with this sort of side of his production. Another obviously classically great release from him. And then finally, another one that you turned me on to, Umbulelo is the name of the artist, and it's Caliber is the name of the EP. This was really, really cool. Really glad you showed me this. It's like a lot of my favorite things on that DJ Lag album that we reviewed on last episode was the kind of like softer,
more melodic sides of Guam. And this is like a beautiful sort of meeting of house and Guam. The Detroit-Durban combination is like just gorgeous. I particularly like the opening track, Play the Beat. It's like super twinkly and like, just really sexy, but also like punchy as well and so bright. And this whole EP is great. And the last two tracks as well, Uranus and God's Groove, which is, you know, quite a name for a track, really. They're like both super spacey and mysterious, like in the similar way to like some of the best moments off that DJ Lag album were. So this is really cool. I'm definitely going to check out more from Umbelelo because it is the sound that I've like instantly fallen in love with just from this EP. So definitely go and check that out as well.
Yeah, I hear exactly what you're saying. That's a really nice way to put it. All the nicest, sweetest bits of the DJ Lag album sort of condensed into this album. Yeah, into this record. I hadn't sort of thought about that. Definitely. It's really cool. Lovely picks, pal. I will go with mine. I'm going to start with WZY2.5, which is a little various artist compilation from Dublin's Woozy label, who are dedicated, as they say, to dub-heavy sounds and DJs of modern sound system culture. This is a great, really, really great club VA. And what I like about this is it kind of harks back to, you know, the times of like Mercy, like Joy O and Bodica and like the Swamp 81, like those like mid 2010s, you know, those really wobbly, wobbly, wonky bits of bass that are just like all about, yeah, like filling that low end, but in the kind of coolest and wonkiest way possible. I feel like these tracks basically sort of hark back to that, but with a kind of fresh sheen of 2022 on them, and certainly not like a kind of pastiche. They do feel fresh. This is great. It's just great, great music throughout. I particularly love Huna with Lang. That's a great tune, really sick tune. Again, it's got a super satisfying twist in the second half. H with Induction, that's H spelled E-I-C-H, is also a brilliant, like, wonky bit of kind of just, you know, that UK bass music that's just like, yeah, that's a UK bass music bit kind of wonky, super heavy, it's sick. And you get some like really nice kind of slightly dubbier drum and bass leaning stuff like Jasmine's Grumpy Cat, which is a funny name, which I like a lot. Subalik as well with Deadly. All of these tracks are worth their space. They earn their place. 8 tracks, great VA compilation from a really sick label. I liked Woozy 001 a lot, which had like Yush on it and Durango. So that kind of tells you the sort of domain that Woozy are sort of occupying. Really sick VA. Next up, Driss Bennis, aka OCB, with Transhuman Express, which is a really neat little nod to Kraftwerk there on Casa Voyager, Morocco label. Really sick. Kind of, if you're familiar with Casa Voyager and OCB, you know it's kind of like Detroit electro funk leaning, bit of kind of like G funk and sort of like almost kind of like Cali hip hop esque in some of these tracks. For example, like the sort of the incredible groove of like Faded Flowers and MoFat featuring Slick Tim. This also has the tune AquaQuest Part 2.5 on it, which is like, I guess, the third sort of flip of AquaQuest, which is quite a legendary OCB tune, quite a legendary tune, full stop. Amazing track, that one. And it's kind of obviously so good that OCB is kind of deemed it fit to have like not one rework by themselves, but also another. And I'm interested to see how AquaQuest keeps getting twisted. Basically, though, this version of AquaQuest slams that beautiful acid line, wiggy acid line and slamming percussion. It's a great EP from a great producer and label. And Undesignated Remixes by John, the remix package of an album that we loved. John comes Prison Religion certified as well. Interviewed those guys recently and they were like, yeah, we love John. And I was like, yeah, we love John too. And this remix package reads like a who of some of jungle, contemporary jungle drum and bass's best, with Equinox, Coco Bryce, Forest Drive West, Drum, Ski Mask, just to name the big hitters. But some of the best moments on this come from the slightly lesser known to me anyway, artists like Scraze's flip of Conti and the Karl Brown's pea and mint mix of Invisible Sandwich, which is particularly insane and brilliant. Yeah, this is a really, really, really essential remix package again for if you love your jungleist stuff, this is the one for sure. Quick shout out as well to Rebecca Delpian's Solitaire EP on Maud. I want to shout this out because this is just like great grinding, hypnotic modular techno from a label that is a kind of staple in that sort of scene. And also just reminded me that Maud are on a great run, like EPs from Roldan and Quelza are two you should definitely check out as well. So yeah, the more loopy grinding modular techno in the world, the better as far as I'm concerned. And that is where we must finish the show.
That's a wrap, baby.
Kept it within 2 hours. That's a wrap. Just under 2 hours. Oh my gosh. It's a bumper episode today.
Imagine they've been
bumper
George episodes.
You know how we do.
Imagine how long.
If there were three of us, honestly, this would be add another hour. It's an hour per person at the moment.
Yeah.
An hour per head. Oh my gosh. Anyways, thank you so much for sticking with us. We hope you enjoyed some of or all of the episode, whatever you stuck around for and tuned in for. Massively appreciate it. Will, mate, always a pleasure. Thanks for doing this, buddy. Thanks for sitting with me and chatting about electronic music for a couple of hours in this sweltering heat, which it has now turned into. Delightful couple of hours well spent, in my opinion. And yeah, we'll see. I'll see you and we will see all of you lot in the dance on Friday. Cannot wait. We will obviously have a little chat about that next show. In the meantime, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, mixes, podcasts, interviews, parties. Yeah, that's about it, I suppose.
Nailed it.
Signing off for another episode. Thank you, everybody. Have a blessed week or two until we next see you. See you next time and take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.